Hello, everyone. My name is Randy Hawthorne, Executive Director of Nonprofit Hub, and welcome to the What's Next podcast. Now, this is a podcast that faces the future of the nonprofit industry head on. Each episode, we'll invite a guest on the show to have a discussion surrounding the changing nonprofit landscape and what that means to nonprofit professionals like you and me. Today's episode is brought to you by Network for Good. Network for Good offers innovative and easy-to-use donor management software, fundraising pages, and personal fundraising coaches. Network for Good's goal is to provide nonprofits with a complete fundraising solution that will securely and efficiently support their overall mission. On today's episode, we have my friend Kashana Palmer. Kashana is a nonprofit consultant who is dedicated to helping other professionals grow. She's helped nonprofits raise over $55 million and is a certified fundraising executive. Let's head on over to the conversation. Hey, I have with me today Kashana Palmer, always great to hear from you. Kashana, how are you today?
I am all right. So glad I get to hang out with you today.
And thanks so much for being kind of the first one to jump into this new podcast. Here at Nonprofit Hub, we get to hear a lot of startup ideas for nonprofit organizations. And, you know, I talk about the fact that I probably redirect more passion than I actually allow new nonprofits to start. one of the things that I keep hearing, you know, I have this sense that, you know, we're at that point of innovation in our sector. I just wanted to start having conversations with some of my good friends about what that looks like. So thanks again for jumping on and doing this and being the first. We're going to probably learn a lot today that that John Hayden won't have to sit through, you know?
Hey, I hooked it up for you, John.
So we're going to just jump into the deep end real quick. If you're still working in the nonprofit sector in 10 years, what's it look like to you?
Totally. You know, this is something that I think about quite a bit as I do my work. And I'm of two minds on this one, Randy. So on the one hand, I think it's going to be a time where organizations who have really figured out how to align their mission, their values with their donors, their mission, their values, because, you know, each of us are led to do a certain thing, and to really bring in, I call them, you know, either donor partners who really support the work that the organizations want to do so they can start to see change in their particular area of mission. I think those organizations are going to leap ahead. I think organizations that are sort of stuck and continue to sort of like limp along behind innovation are going to find themselves on the outside of being able to really be catalysts for change. And I think folks would say, oh, it's because we're not big enough or because we don't have the budget. Mm-mm. I think that big organizations with large budgets who don't get their act together are going to suffer the same fate. And so in 10 years, and I'm like thinking to myself, Lord, that's when my baby will be in college. Oh my gosh, I'm old later. But in 10 years, we're looking at a sector that either has really kind of figured out how to think about innovation differently and think about how to solve for problems and for big world problems differently, or an organization or an industry that is faltering because we just refuse to take our head out of the sand. I would like to think it's going to be the former. We have pushed forward by leaps and bounds because there are going to be some real game changers, and we're starting to see that emerge. Individuals, leaders, and organizations, I call it the implementation community, that's us who are doing the work, who really want to be able to solve big, huge problems in the world and can find a pathway to do that. And so that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. One of the things that I talk about from time to time is, you know, we are also two blocks from a college campus. And so I get to talk to a lot of students, and I think this next group of people that are becoming young professionals right now, I tell them, this is your opportunity to actually once and for all solve some problems. I think we started in the sector noticing the problems and trying to truncate the problem, you know, put the Band-Aid on, let's get the problem, you know, taken care of. But I don't think we, you know, there's a lot of great people that are doing root cause work. and trying to find and get back to the beginning. But I think novices that say, I want to start a nonprofit probably are looking at Band-Aid stuff in a lot of cases. Any thoughts around, you know, I think once and for all, we're going to solve some big world problems in the next generation. Any thoughts around that?
Yeah, we're going to have to do that, right? And I think that lots of our social challenges fall under some pretty big but basic buckets. It all is sort of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs around food and shelter and water and emotional care. And that could be of people and of animals, like, and of things in the environment. And so each of the big problems that we're looking at solving right now, generally, I'm using like the biggest brush, you guys who are listening to this, that I can, really fall into some pretty basic buckets. I think the challenge is that for every person that wakes up and goes, today I will start an organization. I often wonder when folks come to me because they want help with growing their organization, raising money, or something to do with, you know, making sure that their organization grows. And I think to myself, did you do a Google search and look and see that this organization exists in some form? I wonder if folks are actually taking the time to see, like, what is actually happening in the community I work in and I live in order to see if there's an organization I should align myself with, if they're a band of us that should get together and really think about how to solve for problems differently, or do I really have something that stands out as a problem that we're not solving yet that folks understand needs to be solved? Because I think that lots of organizations get started because there's a huge problem and nobody understands what to do about it. But then we don't articulate how to bring people into that narrative, into that story, so they can see themselves in how the problem exists and also how they can help solve. And I think that that, to me, for organizations and for the leaders of organizations, doesn't have to be the CEO or ED, Randy, you know, it can be senior leadership and it can be midline managers, for there to be a conversation that happens that we think differently about how we're going to solve for some of the problems and to remain committed to not do business as usual.
Yeah, you were telling me not long ago that something about when you were actually out on, you know, doing the fundraising, that you had a group of folks that started going to donors together. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So one of the things that I did when I was a chief development officer at an organization was I got together with some of the other development heads and we talked, you know, first of all, we were lamenting initially about why we had to do all this extra work to get what we called nickel and dime money at the time. Now, investment is different for every organization, y'all. So what is big money to one organization is not to another. So I'm going to name that. But we were having this conversation and we were like, you know, we've got to be able to have to talk to this particular funder because they're making us compete. And it's silly. If we work together, we'd be able to maximize the strengths from each of our program areas within our organization and work together to get this done. There'd be more money and less work. And so we banded together to figure out like how to have this conversation and to present the problem to the particular funder more like in a cohort style. Funders was really popular and it worked. It was a really, really great opportunity for us to have a conversation with each other to remove competition from the table to go, wait a minute, if we work together, what we're actually solving for is super powerful. Let's go have a different conversation. And we pitched something different to that particular funder. Thankfully, that funder was progressive. They were sunsetting. And so they were game to like think about things differently. That doesn't always work for everyone. So I want to name that. Like folks like Ashana, that doesn't always work. You're right. But start from where we started, having the conversation with your peers at organizations that feel similar to yours, that operate similarly to yours, to see like, okay, what kind of synergies can we pull together and how can we position ourselves as a group to be able to seek investment in the work that we're doing so that everybody wins? I think that is something that we can do more of.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm kind of seeing too around this area is how do we make our donors more progressive? You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah. I think, like Vu and you and a number of other people, you know, we're preaching to the choir. We're talking about this new kind of nonprofit, but our donors are still a lot of them are still stuck in the old ways. How do we educate our donors better around, hey, let's try something different here because we're going to really, really make change.
Yeah, I think that the stories that we are telling our donors right now, by and large, are the same stories we've always told. And I don't believe, which is why you see so many webinars popping up and you see so many conversations happening, articles being written on how to communicate better with donors. Even the word communication to me feels like a red herring. But like, how do you enroll is the word I like to use, donors into what's happening now so that they feel that they have a place in that story. And in action, that could look like the way that you talk about transforming in your newsletter communications, in your social media communications, in your direct mail communications. You might have to change it up a bit. You might have to change up your tone, the language you're using, how you're solving for the problem, where you see the gaps. And I think what is missing from that is transparency. We are scared to death to share with our donors, who are our partners, what the heck is really going on in our organizations early enough. So we do things like, and Randy, you know this one, we're a lean, mean fighting machine. No, we're not. We're exhausted and tired and our people are underpaid. Okay, let's come on, keep it real. Or the next thing is, we do more with less and almost all of our money goes to programs. Why are we telling folks that? The folks who run organizations, from the person who answers the phone at the front desk to the person who's in the field doing that work to the person who's using their executive function to do something else. Hello, people have families, lives, they gotta eat. Treat our team members in our organizations worse than we do the people we're trying to help.
Right.
And allow that. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah.
No. I was just agreeing. I was just like, yes, yes.
I'm like, that's what it is to me. I'm like, so we're telling this narrative, like we treat our people crappy and it's cool. Right. Right. Give us more money for the other people. No.
No. If we're doing it right, 100% of your donation is going back to the cause, because if I wasn't sitting across from the table from you, we wouldn't be able to have programs. Sorry. You know, I always talk with executive directors about the fact that we're not competing with other nonprofits for the best and the brightest. We are competing with the hot companies in our community. Those are the people that I want. I want to work with the cool kids, you know? And you can't get cool kids with just care, you know?
Cannot get the cool kids with just care. Let's keep it really real. For those of y'all listening, depending on where you grew up in the world, okay? I grew up in New York City, in Queens, as it were, okay? And to be a cool kid, when I grew up in the 80s, meant you had to have the fresh kicks, that's sneakers, that's trainers, depending on what part of the world we're in. You had to have the newest gear. And let me tell you something. My family, my dad and mom were not here for any of it, Randy, okay? If it wasn't for the fact that I was like incredibly funny and smart, I don't know, I probably would have been like really unpopular. It'd have been a mess, okay? But I wasn't having it. But you have to have the things, right, to be the cool kid. Something. It's the same thing for your organization. You might not be able to afford the freshest kicks, trainers, as it were, you guys, but you better have something in your benefits package as a part of your organizational culture, the way that you treat your people, that invites all the rock stars to the table. Okay, like period. It doesn't always have to be just money, but let us not pretend that money is not a currency that attracts folks, a resource that attracts folks to the table. The same way donors come in and provide that, as long as so you can do your work, is the same way you got to do that for your people. And so I think that disconnect happens with the way we talk to our donors, that we sort of disaggregate the work that we're doing in the community from the people who are actually doing the work. And that has been pervasive, so much so that it is a part now of the psyche of how many people give. And that to me has got to change. You asked about 10 years from now. If we don't change that, boy, oh boy, the folks that we want to stay are going to be leaving in droves to go do something else.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, we kind of shoot ourselves in the foot a little bit, as they say, when we talk about them. And you're right. Now we've let it just become part of the conversation, and it's an expectation, and it's a frustration for me.
Exactly. Totally.
Hey, Kashana, this is so great. We do need to take just a minute from to get a word from our sponsor. It's Network for Good.
Oh my gosh, I love Network for Good. And as a fundraising coach with Network for Good, I can tell you that when you plug in to that network, you are good.
Hey, we didn't even know that about you. So this is just awesome that Network for Good is doing this. So here's just a few words. Do good, feel good. That's the Network for Good motto. Since 2001, Network for Good has been helping nonprofits engage with donors through data management, online fundraising, and expert coaching. Network for Good's donor management software organizes your data so you can easily communicate with your donors and put their gifts to work. Easy to use online donation pages attract new donors, increase gifts, and drive repeat giving. Plus, their Donor Advise Fund uses mobile technology to securely distribute thousands of donations each year. Cultivate your donors and generate new ones by partnering with Network for Good. Visit networkforgood.com to schedule a demo today or sign up for their virtual conference, Nonprofit Marketing That Works, and learn to create ways to raise money through digital fundraising. And now let's head back to the conversation. Let's talk a little bit about taking the donors out of the equation. How can we do good and find different revenue streams that you talk sometimes about, like different business models that might work in the nonprofit sector? Lay it down for me on how you see some of those kinds of things working in this sector.
Totally. So one of the things that I think from a business model perspective is, one, starting from the premise that we are not going to be lean and mean. I think that is foolishness. Like, just setting up your organization so that it is going to be sustainable and it's going to be run by the best, the baddest, and the brightest. Period. So I think that's one thing. The organizations and for-profit companies, when they are thinking about how to have competitive advantage in today's day and age, competitive advantage is around talent. It's not around innovation, because innovation is happening too quickly. You've got to have good people on your team who are subject matter experts and lifelong learners in their area of expertise so that you can stay nimble in how you approach the work. So I think that, to me, from a business model perspective, talent first is one of the things that I would think makes a lot of sense. And I think a teeny tiny budget, or you're an organization who steps into being able to raise lots of money and has a massive budget. So I think that, to me, is one, thinking about talent first. The other one that I have seen a lot of and actually worked in is the space we sort of call like social ventures. And social ventures are typically started by folks who probably would have had a career doing something else if they were not a nonprofit founder, but decided they had a really big problem that they wanted to solve for. And so this is the way they chose to do it. And then they go and they seek investment from some pretty key funders early on, who essentially back their idea and back them as a founder. And then they build their organization around scalability, around replicability, and around widespread impact. And so you see organizations who end up getting funded by the nonprofits of the world, the nonprofit finance funds, the DRGs. Those organizations think about how to solve really huge problems, the big scale, very early on. And then they set up their organizations to mimic that. National offices, regional outposts, national teams with local executive directors on the ground, et cetera. Those are organizations that are really looking to scale pretty fast. So that's a business model that I've seen happen over and over again. I think the last one is really thinking about organizations that are intentional in the size they want to become. And so they know they want to grow to serve X number of people in their local community that are interested in being a regional organization or a national organization. And they do all of their program design, their operational setups, their executive leadership, the way they think through volunteer management and engagement, how they put together their boards around that work. The challenge is, in any of these models that I talked about, and I know there are tons more, I'm not sure that we do the work at the beginning to set up, to be set up well. And what I mean by that is, have we thought through how we're going to do it? Have we done scope and sequence on program planning and how fundraising is going to have to step into that? Have we thought about the type of community players that we want to be involved in our organization as volunteers, as board members, as influencers who can pick up the phone? Have we thought about other organizations in our space, whether it's in our local community or regional or national, that have tried to do similar work and succeeded? What did it take? And failed? What did they miss? And really think about that and how they build out the model for the organization so that your actual model is sound. Lots of folks just jump into doing the work, right? And so that's where I see that disconnect happening in terms of business models.
Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that. The more upfront that you can think about as you do this, and what does success look like, and how have people failed, that's so key, because you're right. We just jump into it, and I've seen so much of that, and it's another one of those points where it's like, oh, we should wait just a minute. I just heard a stat. I don't know if it's true. I haven't fact checked this. It was over my lunch hour. Someone said 9,000 nonprofits. 9,000 nonprofits were approved last year. 9,000. That seems like a lot to me. I don't know.
I mean, it does seem like a lot, and yet it's probably true.
Yeah, exactly. And are those 9,000 of those 9,000? You know, how many are going to be around in a couple of years? How many are based off of a knee-jerk reaction to something that was seen and they didn't seek any guidance? You know, it's just it's. I hope some of those 9,000 start listening to us.
I hope so. And it's the thing that I struggle with a lot. You know, one of the biggest things I do now is working with organizations that are just looking to get started and referring them to awesome resources like yours. But when they want to get down to like the brass tacks of how to actually, and I run a program that allows them to do that, called 501c Profit. And my goal at the end of the course, honestly, Randy, is that they decide not to do it. And I've been in the sector literally, except for 2 years, my whole career. And the reason I feel that way is because I think that there are lots of really well-meaning, mediocre organizations that already exist that have the potential to be amazing. And what I would love to see are folks who want to get started and have a really great idea around a mission that they want to tweak just a little bit from another organization, figure out how to get involved with organizations that exist. And then for the organizations that exist that are struggling, you know, you're struggling, you know, when you are in struggle city, to allow for folks to come in to really engage with you and support you on that work. I think that there's some magic there that we are leaving on the table.
I so agree. You know, so this isn't just people trying to start a nonprofit. It's the nonprofits that are out there.
Absolutely.
We need to be open to new people coming in with new ideas, because this next generation of young professionals that are coming in to our sector, they're going to look to want to do things differently, and they might have some pretty darn good ideas that you should be listening to see if you can go to the next level within your organization, because Kashana and I are pushing these ideas into things that exist. We don't need to tweak and open another thing. You know, I joke there's three things that you want to start in life at some point in your life. It's a bar or a restaurant and a nonprofit. And if you look at the fail rates of those things, oh my goodness, they're the big ones.
It's like grand opening, grand closing. And you know, and when you're thinking about, social good, which is where we sit in the social sector, and it's, you know, period, paragraph, Randy. One of the things I noticed the other day, I've been really trying to be intentional with not saying nonprofit, but I noticed that people still get confused. They're like,
right.
What are you talking about exactly? I've been trying to move away from this non. I've seen like a lot of folks talk about that. Like, we shouldn't be saying non because it means that it's not happening or it's negative. And I was like, I could get with that. But in thinking about the nonprofit sector and the social sector in general, like I know that folks want to do great work. Like, that is something that I think is really consistent. I feel really proud of being a career professional in the work that we do. The thing that I want to see happen now is that folks step their game all the way up. And what I mean by that is, folks, we know you are tired. Take care of yourself at home. Self-care is super important. Having boundaries is super important. I guarantee you, when you start to do those things and live your life in a more healthy way, whatever that means for you and for your family, that you will do better work. You'll be more rested. You'll be clearer in your thought. You'll be able to bring your best self to work. We are operating from a state of fatigue that people tweet me or they write things in webinars and stuff I do, Randy. Folks are exhausted. Can we talk about that? Like, yeah. They are tired and yet starting stuff every day.
Yeah, so many points to unpack there, but the whole notion of our sector being misnamed, and I'm with you. Unfortunately, I'm in the business where people are out looking for resources and they type in the word nonprofit, so I have to use it still.
Yes, please use it.
but that's, you know, that's something. And yeah, I am a relatively newly minted executive director, and I can see, I'm about 3 years in now, and I can see what you're talking about with that whole fatigue thing. Like, man, you know, it's just, you got to take care of yourself. And I need to take a pill for that for sure. Take my own medicine right now. Well, hey, you know, it's always great to talk to you, Kashana. This is, you're always enlightening. You're fun. It's always a good thing. It's always great to hear your voice. So thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I know we will have more discussions in the future. I am excited for, you know, everything that you're going to bring to the table around just being able to open up discussions around what's next for us in our sector. And you are doing amazing work. You know, I love you guys at the Nonprofit Hub. So I'm super excited to be a part of the crew.
Thanks so much. And that's what's next. Thanks so much to Kashana for joining us for today's conversation, and thanks to all of you for tuning in. I hope we provided some insights you can take back to your organization, or at least a little entertainment. Thanks again to Network for Good for making this episode possible. And you'll have to tune in next time to learn what's next.